You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, June 20th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We're so glad we can have you here today. We got a jam-packed marijuana agenda to get to. We first celebrate that the country to the south of us, Mexico, has legalized the medical use of marijuana. Congratulations for having some sense. Canada's got medical, Mexico's got medical, the United States is sandwiched in between. At least some of the states have medical. We'll cover that in the cannabis headline news coming up after the first break. Also, in our news today, we've got information on Expanded Mind, our segment concerning psychedelic research in America. Rick Doblin, the founder of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, gave a keynote address at the Psychedelic Science Conference. We'll bring you the portion where he talks about using ecstasy, MDMA, as a treatment for post-traumatic stress. In Reefer Madness Debunked, we'll talk about AAA, the Automobile Club of America, that is fighting against legalization. Some shocking quotes from them. Our activist agenda features our activist correspondent Wayne Reese and his discussions with Amy Ruth Tobel from SUNY Albany and Cassandra Frederick from Drug Policy Alliance on New York marijuana reforms. And in the Radical Rant, I'll tell you all about the Oregon tax theft, all coming up next.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts, plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Statistics show that 40% of all kids who smoke marijuana live in the city. Guess where the other 60% live?
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose, deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at marijuanamoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Tuesday, June 20th, 2017. I'm Russ Belleville. Today, Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto officially published a bill that makes medical marijuana available and legal in Mexico. The historic change in policy for this critical Latin American nation, as reported by Marijuana.com, marks another country that has welcomed cannabis as an important tool for healing the sick. On Friday, April 28th, Mexico's lower house in parliament overwhelmingly passed the bill with a 374-7 vote. It was then up to the leader of the country to officially sign and turn it into law, which the president finally executed today. In December of last year, the bill received incredible support from the Mexican Senate with a yes vote of 98-7. The recent passing of the bill in parliament was publicly endorsed by Mexico's Secretary of Health, Dr. José Narro Robles, who stated, quote, "I welcome the adoption of the therapeutic use of cannabis in Mexico," end quote. The Colorado Supreme Court has ruled that laws banning the home manufacture of butane hash oil are not unconstitutional, overturning a district court ruling that declared that the Legalization Amendment 64 secured such a right. In the ruling, the court stated, quote, "Although processing marijuana plants is a protected personal activity under Colorado's Amendment 64, manufacturing marijuana is protected only as a facility operation activity that requires a license. At the time Amendment 64 was approved, Colorado law established that extracting hash oil was manufacturing, not processing, and the Supreme Court assumes Amendment 64 adopted that settled meaning," end quote. The case centered on a man named Austin Lent, who admitted to police responding to a fire at his home that he had caused the fire in his laundry room while trying to extract hash oil from marijuana. Legislators in Maine have rejected the creation of two supervised injection facilities in the state to relieve the effects of the opioid overdose epidemic. The Maine Sun Journal reports the Senate voted 26-9 to kill the proposal Monday. The House shot it down last week by a 98-47 margin. Such facilities have been operating in Vancouver, Canada, and throughout Europe, and have proven to reduce overdose deaths and transmission of HIV and hepatitis C, all without increases in crime, violence, or drug use. However, elected opponents of the measure said, quote, "We are not ready for this. I hope we are never ready for this," end quote, and were, quote, "just shocked at the," quote, "ridiculous," end quote, idea, fearing the centers would be, quote, "targets for dealers where illegal drug use gets a blind eye turned toward it," end quote. Allison Martin at BuzzFeed News reports that the Automobile Association of America, popularly known as AAA, is, quote, "actively lobbying against all cannabis legalization efforts," end quote. Martin says a AAA spokesperson explained to her that, quote, "if you're impaired by marijuana, you're less likely to be able to evade a crash," end quote, and that, quote, "cannabis will contribute to a crash whether you are responsible for a crash," end quote. Continuing AAA's disregard for established science, the spokesperson told Martin, quote, "Nobody smokes marijuana for any other purpose other than to get high, whether it's for medical or recreational use. The point of smoking marijuana or eating an edible is to get high, and it's the end game regardless of your intent," end quote. The spokesperson concluded the anti-pot rant by stating, quote, "It is a reckless policy move to legalize this drug for recreational use, and we're going to fight it as long as we have to," end quote. WLWT-TV in Cincinnati reports that the Hamilton County coroner, Dr. Lakshmi Samarko, claims synthetic opiates like fentanyl have been found in marijuana. Fentanyl, a drug 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine, has been linked to a surge of fatal overdoses across the country. It has been showing up in other drugs across the area. Quote, "We have seen fentanyl mixed with cocaine. We have also seen fentanyl mixed with marijuana," end quote, Samarko said during a joint press conference with Senator Rob Portman. She did not specify how many cases involved marijuana mixed with a synthetic opiate, saying, quote, "Essentially, the message we've tried to get out there is if you are using any form of street drugs, count on them having some form of synthetic opioid mixed in," end quote, Samarko said, echoing reports from anti-drug officials throughout the country who never seem to present actual evidence of such cross-doping. Samarko added that it is nearly impossible to tell which drugs are mixed with a synthetic opiate and evoked Nancy Reagan by telling drug users, "just don't use it, that's all we can tell you."
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belleville.
At Herbie
Murphy's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all respected customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
Welcome to Expanded Mind, our look at the world of psychedelic drugs. Like cannabis, psychedelic drugs have great medical potential and a low risk for dependency, with little to no chance of fatal overdose, depending on the substance. Today, we speak to the experts who are researching the latest science on psychedelic substances in this edition of Expanded Mind. Welcome to Expanded Mind. I'm Russ Belville. Today, we return to Oakland, California, where in April, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS, along with the Beckley Foundation, presented the 2017 Psychedelic Science Conference and Workshops. MAPS founder and executive director Rick Doblin, Ph.D., delivered the opening address, including this portion detailing the use of MDMA, commonly called ecstasy, on a Marine veteran of the Iraq War who suffers from post-traumatic stress.
Now, we have since, starting in 2000, worked with PTSD, and we've done studies in the United States, Switzerland, Israel, and Canada. We've treated 107 people, and we've gotten tremendous results in these small phase two pilot studies where you're looking for your methods, you're looking for the doses, you're looking for your outcome measures. And so the results that we got from these studies were pretty astonishing. Now, you do these controlled studies, and we're comparing therapy either with an inactive placebo or low-dose MDMA versus therapy with full-dose MDMA, active-dose MDMA. So it's not what you might traditionally think of as a placebo, because the control condition is the therapy. And we have to show that the therapy itself really benefits from the addition of MDMA, because if you could do it with the therapy pretty well and the MDMA doesn't make that much of a difference, then why take the risk of adding a drug? But what we showed is 23% of the people in our study who got the therapy alone or low-dose MDMA no longer had PTSD. It's a testament to the power of therapy. It's roughly 40 hours of therapy with a male-female co-therapist team. But when you add two sessions of MDMA, the benefits more than double to 55% of the people no longer had PTSD. And these are chronic treatment-resistant PTSD patients. And then when you add a third session, and this is 2 months after the last MDMA session, it's up to 61%. But the real question is, does this last? Is this like a psychedelic afterglow? Is there long-term change? And so at the 1 year or more follow-up, we're up to over two-thirds no longer have PTSD. So something, it's fantastic. Something fundamentally is changing in people's brains and their emotions through this therapy, and the benefits increase over time. So I'm going to give you now a two-minute video of one of the MDMA therapy sessions to give you a sense of how MDMA actually works. This is Nicholas Blackston, who was in the book Acid Test, and this is from his first MDMA session, and he was dealing with rage. He'd never beat his wife, but he got angry a lot. He threw stuff, and this was one of his presenting symptoms. And so he's going to talk a little bit about that while he's under the influence of MDMA with Michael and Annie Mitchell.
I thought I was being a peaceful person, but I didn't realize how much I was punishing that aspect of me. Mm. I think I was just... I think maybe in Iraq I saw what it was capable of. And I think I was too afraid to... Mm. You know, and a part of me just feels like so bad that I did that to him. Mm. I mean, I know it's me, but I just describe what it's
like. Are you?
But I just that's really amazing. I don't know, I just got this amazing sense of just, I guess, wisdom. I really don't know.
Sounds a lot like wisdom to me.
It was really amazing. And even when I try and think of that really rageful aspect of me, like I can't even, I know it's there, but it just doesn't, I really feel like so much more at peace with like everything.
Great.
Like even if I try and think about Iraq and everything, like I somehow feel like really peaceful about the fact that that's my journey. And that,
yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Part of me thinking, I mean, I know this is part of the, part of the drug, but when I try and think, you know, am I going to be able to hold on to this, this understanding, this somewhat of wisdom, this knowledge that I have now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just asking myself that question, I feel like it's so profound that I don't think I could really get it.
Wow. I think you can see in a way how the how he's processing that's not that different from normal consciousness. And so I think it does help to make it something that does last, that you can integrate it. The lessons that we learned in phase two, we learned a bunch of lessons. We learned that we can work with PTSD from any cause, childhood sexual abuse, complex PTSD, war-related PTSD. We can enroll anybody that has got chronic severe PTSD. We also learned, to our surprise, and this was my dissertation was based on figuring out how to do the double-blind problem, and it turned out I was wrong. But I thought low-dose MDMA would be the key because it would increase the blinding. And we saw that it did. But low-dose MDMA had an anti-therapeutic effect. It activated people. It didn't reduce the fear. So it's not actually a good control condition. And so we're going to go to inactive placebo. We demonstrated safety in clinical conditions, and we showed a medium to large effect size. And this helped us figure out how to design phase three. So we brought all this data, 16 years of data, starting in the struggle in 2000, to the FDA meeting November 29th, 2016, an end of phase two meeting. We had the New York Times primed. So the next day there was an article reporting the good news. FDA agrees to new trials for ecstasy as a relief for PTSD patients. Of course, we wish they would have said MDMA instead of ecstasy. And then the New York Times sort of condenses the daily news into the daily briefing, which you get on your phones or email and stuff. And this was their daily briefing for the day. Trump transition, Standing Rock, MDMA. No, the first two make you need the third. we just had on Monday and Tuesday here our investigators meeting for phase three. We're bringing people from our 14 different sites, Israel, Canada, and the United States, and we used the opportunity of this conference to start preparing them for the initiation of phase three. This is the design. It's three MDMA sessions, 1 month apart, with 12 non-drug psychotherapy sessions with a male-female co-therapist team. Each of these non-drug therapy sessions are about 90 minutes, three for preparation and then three for integration after each MDMA session. So one group gets 80 milligrams the first time, supplemented by half that 40 after 2 hours, and then they can choose whether to go up to 125 or stay the same. But they don't know exactly that. It's just they say, you know, I want it stronger, I want it the same. And then they're compared with the therapy. And the FDA has approved this design so far. We've had a protocol that we submitted. We got comments on March 8th. They've agreed to some of these key elements. We have still some more discussions to go with May 11th, our next meeting. And we anticipate by around July that we should have an approved phase 3 protocol and ready to go. Now, we've done a lot of work on the costs. The key driver for the cost is the number of patients that you need in the study. And so if we get the same effect size, a medium to large effect size, as we've got in our phase 2 studies, we might be able to do this with just 200 patients. And the FDA has agreed that we're going to be able to start with 200 patients in two 100-person studies. And we're estimating that that's going to cost around $20 million. This is our America First plan, meaning focusing just on the MDMA, on the FDA, I mean. And now, if the results aren't quite as good as we thought, the FDA has permitted us to do an interim analysis, and then we would get information, add X number of people to your study, and then you get statistically significant results. So if the results are not quite as good as we anticipate, then we will be able to do it, we think, with 300 subjects. And if it's that small to medium effect size, that'll cost around $25 million. If we do get medium to large effect sizes, for $25 million, there's the possibility we could get it approved both by FDA and European Medicines Agency. But we haven't started negotiating with the European Medicines Agency until after we've come to agreement with the FDA this summer. And if we have this small to medium effect size for 450 subjects, we think we could do it for $35 million. So somewhere between $20 and $35 million, we should be able to get MDMA approved in the U.S. and in Europe. And now we're starting to think even broader than that, or global. This is hypothetical. We haven't checked it all out. But for around 50 million, 700 subjects, we think we can get it approved in pretty much every country of the world. now, we already have $10 million, thanks to Ashauna Haley and David Bronner and thousands of other donors who brought us to this point. So it's not inconceivable that we will be able to raise the rest of the money. I really think we will. And the way that FDA will permit this to be a medicine is not like a normal medicine where anybody can prescribe it. They have these risk evaluation and mitigation strategies called REMS, and we're proposing that it's only be able to be prescribed by people that we've trained in the therapy, that they know how to do the psychological component, because it's not the drug, it's the drug-assisted psychotherapy, and it will only be administered in certified clinics. It's never going to be a take-home drug as therapy. It's only going to be used under supervision, and there'll be certain safety screenings initially for who can be in the study. So this is how it'll start, and then it will expand. And the way structurally that we're going to do this is that we've realized that one day, once we start selling MDMA by prescription, that could be a possibility of selling it for a bit more than what it costs us, and then with those profits, we can use and invest in more research. But that's something that you can't keep inside a nonprofit. There has to be a for-profit taxable entity. So MAPS has created the MAPS Public Benefit Corporation. And what happens here is that people make donations to MAPS. MAPS invests in the benefit corporation, and then the benefit corporation will sell MDMA. And the key thing about the benefit corporation is that it's not about maximizing profits. It's about maximizing social benefit. And the only investor in the for-profit benefit corporation is the nonprofit MAPS. So that's our structure. So we're going to be focusing just on donations. There's no private gain here. It's all about trying to really improve the health of our society and help us all survive. This is just the FDA gives data exclusivity for drugs that are off patent and for which there are no use patents, which means nobody can use our data for 5 years. And if we do studies in pediatric populations, extra 6 months, which they're requiring us to do. And so I'm just showing this slide to say that in the first 10 years, under conservative assumptions, we're anticipating $53 million worth of profits that can be reinvested in research. So our story to donors is you help us get a jump start on getting MDMA as a medicine, and then a lot of this will be able to be self-funded. Here's the psychedelic clinics of the future one day. This is a beautiful one. One day you'll go to Google Maps and you'll say, where is a psychedelic clinic? And you'll get this. This is also a jobs program. There's over 61 hospice centers in the United States, and every town that has a hospice center, I think, will have a psychedelic treatment center, thousands and thousands of them. President Trump is talking a lot about jobs in coal. Jobs in coal have been diminishing, but in 2021, when we get MDMA approved and psilocybin is approved by USONA and HEFTER and ketamine clinics, there'll be at least 500 full-time jobs, and over time, there's going to be more psychedelic jobs than coal jobs. So this is the real jobs of the future plan. This is where we should be focusing, alternative energy instead of coal. one of these jobs I hope will be mine, my psychedelic therapy license, started my real career. whether this really comes to pass is due to those of us that are here. We've got the world's leading psychedelic researchers and the community that supported that. And so how we proceed from this moment. So please use this conference as a way to refine what we're all doing. Ask your best questions. Be really responsive to the fears and anxieties of the larger culture and see how we can address them. And if you see any questions that you want to ask of any of the speakers, or formally or not, let's just use this opportunity as a way to refine what we're doing. So really bring your best, most critical, but open-minded, open-hearted selves to bear on the conference over the next couple of days. And then if we do that, this will become more than a dream. Thank you.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at MJAgenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6-minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
If you have teenagers, I'm asking you to have a very difficult talk with them. Not about sex. For a lot of us, that would be easy compared to drugs. Drugs like cocaine and crack. But you must talk to them about drugs. If you don't talk about it, if you don't fight it, why should they? The idea of your kids using cocaine or crack ought to scare you to death. So please, learn about it and talk about it.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at MJAgenda.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead of fright.
You know, it's not easy trying to debunk 80 years of anti-marijuana propaganda in a one-hour podcast, but let's try. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Today, I want to report on some tweets that were sent out today by Allison Martin. She's a reporter at BuzzFeed News, and she's got a great story up right now entitled Painful Choices. This firefighter took a doctor's advice to use medical marijuana. Now he could be fired. And Ms. Martin does a great job of pointing out the various Supreme Court cases in states that have legalized the medical use of cannabis, from Brandon Coach to the Casillas case. These cases that have determined that people lawfully using medical cannabis according with their doctor's recommendation and following state laws can still be fired from their employment for no cause other than them having the metabolites of THC in their system. So we've reported on this story many a time, but in her tweets, Ms. Martin pointed out how she had left something out of her story regarding AAA, the Automobile Association of America. And I got to let you know, this really disappointed me because I have been a AAA member for almost 2 decades, I believe, pretty much as long as I've driven. Either someone in my family or myself has had a AAA membership. I've even had kept my AAA membership when I haven't owned a car, just because I've always relied on them. If I'm in someone else's car, get stranded somewhere, I was a road musician traveling in, you know, remote areas, I always wanted to have that safety, that knowledge that I'd have someone to call if something went wrong with the car. But now I have to cancel my AAA membership, and I've got to call on all my listeners and readers to cancel their memberships as well. Thanks to the spokesperson, the director of traffic safety and advocacy and research for AAA, who spoke to Allison Martin for her story, where she points out that AAA is actively fighting against cannabis legalization measures in the United States. Actively fighting it. Actively our enemy. And when she asked him why that is the case, Jake Nelson said, quote, "We shouldn't be legalizing a drug we don't fully understand. If you're impaired by marijuana, you're less likely to be able to evade a crash. You are slower to respond to get out of the way of a driver coming down the way toward you. It will contribute to a crash whether you are responsible for a crash," end quote. Well, this flies in the face of established science and the recognition by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and other federal officials that marijuana use in and of itself is no sort of reliable predictor of crash risk for people who use it and drive. Now, it is true that if you are actively impaired by marijuana, you have slower reaction times. But there are lots of drugs that cause these slower reaction times: the opiate prescriptions, the antihistamines, the barbiturates, the benzodiazepines, and of course, let's not forget alcohol. But we don't see AAA lobbying to reinstate alcohol prohibition or come up with per se DUID limits for opiate and other prescription-based drugs. It's only marijuana they want to single out because they're cannabigots, because they don't like us, they don't like our kind. The science is on our side on this one. According to most recent studies that have taken a look at this, that would debunk the idea that there was any sort of doubling of crash risk from marijuana consuming drivers. The most recent study from Drug and Alcohol Crash Risk, Office of Behavioral Safety Research, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, U.S. Department of Transportation, dated 2015, found the adjusted odds ratio between drug use and crash risk, adjusted for demographic variables and alcohol use, found the odds ratio for THC, marijuana, was 1.00. You know what that means? It means exactly the same risk as a completely sober driver. Now, for comparison's sake, narcotic analgesics had a 1.17 odds risk, that is 17% greater risk. Sedatives had a 1.19 risk, a 19% greater risk. And when you take a look at all legal drugs as one category, 1.02 odds risk. So a 2% greater chance of any possible legal drug out there being a greater crash risk than someone who's found to have THC in their system. The problem with these studies in the past that said there was a double crash risk from cannabis using drivers was the fact that they didn't correct for age and gender. Ask any insurance adjuster, what is the most dangerous driver out there? Who is the most dangerous driver out there? They'll tell you young men between 19 and 24. They statistically have the greatest crash risk, regardless of any other factor. Well, guess who consumes the most marijuana? Young males between 19 and 24. In fact, at every age, 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23, more than 20% of those people are consuming marijuana monthly. And at age 24, it's 18.3%. So damn near one out of five people between age 19, males between age 19 and 24 are consuming marijuana monthly. So yeah, young people are the worst drivers. Young men are the worst drivers. And young men are the ones that smoke pot the most. It's a correlation, not a causation. So AAA, you are wrong on this one. You are flat out wrong. And furthermore, you're incredibly insulting when you say, quote, nobody smokes marijuana for any other purpose other than to get high, whether it's for medical or recreational use. The point of smoking marijuana or eating an edible is to get high, and it's the end game regardless of your intent, end quote. Well, gee, does anyone get high taking an opiate painkiller? Regardless of their intent, they just wanted to deal with their back pain or their traumatic pain, whatever they've got. They do get high from that. They do get a change in mind, a change in mood, an altered perception from that. Do you see AAA lobbying against the legalization or the introduction of new opioid painkillers? No, it's only marijuana because you can tell the can of bigotry. It's right there when they say the only purpose is to get high. Get high. Even medical users, people that are taking care of their nausea, their spasms, their seizures, their chronic pain, their post-traumatic stress, their anxiety, their depression. Nah, that's not medicine. They just want to get high, according to AAA. Well, guess what, AAA? You just lost yourself a whole bunch of customers in California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Alaska, Colorado, Maine, and Massachusetts, the legal states, not to mention the other 21 states that have legalized the medical use of cannabis. You have thrown patients under the bus, you have thrown recreational consumers under the bus, and you have glommed on to the worst type of debunked reefer madness out there about cannabis and driving. We are just as safe as sober drivers, and there's no reason to believe legalization increases any sort of road risk. But hey, you don't need our money.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Now, what's wrong with you? Tonsillitis?
Appendicitis?
Yeah! Nobody's died of tonsillitis around here for a while.
Appendicitis?
Nothing to worry about. Scalpel?
What if the joint were in somebody else's hand, like your surgeon, your lawyer, or your local policeman? Would you still say marijuana is harmless?
No.
Let's see if I can still make a straight line.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to The Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cultivator's Corner with Jorge Cervantes from MarijuanaGrowing.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
We'll be right back. activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
This is Wayne Reese reporting again for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belleville. And you can't believe who is here at the Cannabis Business Conference.
It's SUNY Empire State College.
And
I got to show you something. I mean, you know the world is changing when the military is talking about cannabis. So why don't you tell everybody in the cannabis community who you are and what the heck is SUNY Empire State College doing at a weed conference?
Well, I'm Amy Ruth Tobel, and I'm an associate professor in public affairs and social sciences at SUNY Empire State College. We're a part of the SUNY system that's particularly designed for working adults. We have 35 locations around New York State, and we teach online. And what we discovered is a lot of our students who work in human services really need to know about medical cannabis, which is now legal in New York State, because their clients in the field are asking them, is this something I can use for my illnesses? So we started developing curriculum in medical cannabis studies. We're offering three courses right now. One is understanding a medical marijuana residency, which we're offering online and in person. I personally teach medical cannabis and the law at our Brooklyn office. And we're in the process of developing certificate programs, both undergraduate and graduate, in medical cannabis studies, because our students need to know. Now, in terms of our military, we've been designated a military-friendly institution, and I'm actually one of the professors that advises military students. We have a lot of benefits for our veterans and our active duty military and their families if they want to come back and do college with us. We offer associate degrees, bachelor's degrees, and master's degrees in a wide range of areas. And these courses will actually fit into degrees in human services, business, public affairs, healthcare management, and a lot of other programs. So give me a call.
Oh my gosh, you know what?
Because we are cool.
You sold me. So essentially, what you're sort of saying here is that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of the implications of the regulation of cannabis coming out from the rock that it's been under for 100 years. And it seems to me that it's beyond racial justice, it's beyond economic boom. Now we're talking about education.
Absolutely. I mean, we're a liberal arts college, and I think we would do a disservice to our students if they don't come out with degrees with some knowledge of what today's world looks like. And what today's world looks like, I mean, particularly in healthcare, is that we have this potential for other options in taking care of illnesses and for us to serve our clients in particular ways. So it's really important that in a liberal arts education, the students really understand how this operates. And from a legal perspective, since that's what I teach about, one of the things that has been really useful to me as a professor is that the whole debate around cannabis and medical marijuana really gives me the opportunity to really help people understand federalism, the differences between federal and state law, how does industry evolve in this kind of very complicated legal environment. So, you know, we're not, and I have to do this as a disclaimer, Empire State College is not either for or against legalization. We don't take any position on that. What we're trying to do is to get students to understand some really current controversies and to be able to do critical thinking about this.
Wow. It's really amazing. I'm here with Cassandra Frederick from Drug Policy Alliance. Cassandra, thank you so much for giving me this interview.
No problem.
Full disclosure, I'm a huge Cassandra fan. I watch her on YouTube, and you should too. So Cassandra, also full disclosure, we just were both on a bus on Monday. We went to Albany to lobby the legislature, and maybe to talk a little bit about what we were doing.
Yeah, so on Monday we went to Albany to
have a press conference and do some public education about the Marijuana Regulation Taxation Act, which is the marijuana legalization bill that is being sponsored by Liz Krueger and Crystal People-Stokes in the Assembly. It was super important because that bill was originally introduced in 2013, and it was reintroduced or amended in 2017, really focusing on building pathways for small businesses, as well as having provisions that really focus on increasing racial justice around marijuana in New York.
So I asked this to Chris, too. I got an interview with Chris, but I thought maybe I'd get your perspective as well. So what are some of the parts of this bill that are unique to New York? What part of policies in other states do you want to utilize? What part of policies do you think are failing and not working? So maybe you could talk a little bit about what's in the bill and what's going to work for us.
I think what's been really successful and really good has been the California Prop 64 initiative, stuff that we put into the bill, really focusing on community reinvestment funds, really focusing on how can we reduce criminalization among young people. And then I also think the things that we knew that was super important was about making sure that the industry focused on diversity. New York was the marijuana arrest capital of the world. It's still one of the places that arrest the most people for marijuana, and it would be a problem if the people that have been most criminalized by marijuana policy were not able to benefit from the new emerging business. So really focusing on diversity and making sure that people are able to be a part of the business. Really focusing on what New York has done really well around wine and beer, which is like small business and craft, and trying to bring that kind of business here to New York.
So I'm just going to play devil's advocate because you've got to sell this to legislators, and we all know the song and dance that they're going to give you. So I'm going to give you some of the blowback, you know, rather than toss you some softball questions. So Kevin Sabat is going to say to you, you're going to legalize marijuana. It's going to be horrible for black communities because there's going to be a weed store on every corner, and it's going to, you know, they're going to sell to kids, and this isn't a social justice issue. This is an issue to create big marijuana. And they're going to go after black folks.
Yeah. So one, I don't think we should take direction from white men about that. So that's one, right?
What?
And two, I would say I think it's super important that the message that we're sending right now is that we don't have big marijuana, we have big law enforcement in our community. And anything that we can do there to reduce the power and reduce the interaction between law enforcement and communities of color is essentially really good for us. And I would also say that I think it's important that we do have to be judicious about where marijuana businesses are placed. We don't want an oversaturation in communities of color, but we already have the oversaturation of marijuana criminalization in communities of color, and that's what we need to deal with.
And let's be frank, do you really think that prohibition is stopping anybody?
Prohibition hasn't been effective at all. So we just need to get to a place where we're taking the leadership of people, communities of color, and stop having white people talk for us.
And you know what? I thought she's right. Okay, now, how did you come to this?
We're going to make sure. You know, for me, I was a social worker at Columbia, and Drug Policy Alliance was my placement area. I had no idea about drug policy. I very much was like, drugs are bad for the community, they're terrible. And then I started reading, and then I started meeting people, and then I realized that a lot of the things that I was taught was wrong. Very similar to Thanksgiving. I think when you realize that the Thanksgiving story isn't real, it's kind of how I felt about the drug war. I was like, wow, this isn't real. And so really getting to a place where I can learn about information and really talking to people who are true about it and finding out what are the benefits for us to move forward.
And I just got an interview with Diane Servino. Right. So she was very supportive of medical and not so supportive of recreation.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with that?
You know, I think we have to give credit to Senator Diane Servino for the work that she's done on medical marijuana. And I also think that people put limits on imagination, and that's not my business. I'm in the business of creating stories and changing lives and saving lives. And I think we have to figure out different ways, and recreational marijuana is part of that. And we can do it effectively, we can do it based on science, and we can do it based on justice. And that's what we're
really focused on. Can I get a hug?
Yeah, sure.
Doesn't she hug good?
Thanks, y'all.
Great news from the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Peace, y'all.
Good, how are you doing?
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
MJAgenda.com.
Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Hey, Ellen, want a hit?
Want to smoke a joint before trying this on?
There you go, Ellen. You want to get high? We got some great Thai stick in the back.
Smoke. Kind buds. Sensei.
Love this stuff. It'll get you really high.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
You've heard this story before, but this time there's a twist. One, the federal government considers marijuana a Schedule I controlled substance. No medical use, no safe use in the United States, yada, yada, yada. High potential for abuse. Schedule I substance. We know that, two, federal laws prevent financial institutions from laundering the proceeds of trafficking in Schedule I substances. So, you know, drug dealers can't have bank accounts, basically. We know, number three, that there are 29 states that have passed laws allowing the medical or recreational use of marijuana. And we know that, four, those states have required the licensed sellers of marijuana to pay state taxes. And number five, we know that even though the substance they're selling is federally illegal, licensed sellers also must pay their federal taxes. Six, since the federal laws prevent these licensed sellers from opening bank accounts, these businesses are forced to pay their taxes with smelly duffel bags full of cash, which the IRS penalizes them 10% for doing, or they have to pay through money orders. This is a story we've told many times, the lack of banking opportunities for the legitimate medical and recreational marijuana industries in the 8 states that have legalized and the 29 that have medical marijuana. We've told the story before, nothing different there until now. Enter Ed Medina, a Klamath Falls, Oregon medical marijuana dispensary owner who adds a twist to our story. State tax officials in Salem sent Medina a notice in February that his December tax payment hadn't been received.
Medina, however, had sent his December tax payment in as a money order on January 17th by certified mail. The state received it on January 20th, according to the U.S. Postal Service's records. Keith Manser of the Oregon Cannabis Connection newspaper got in touch with Medina, who explained how, quote, "the Department of Revenue treated me as if I was the criminal," end quote, when he tried to explain that he had sent his tax payment in and he had the Postal Service receipts to prove that the payment was both sent and received, plus he had the Western Union documentation to back it all up. Now, Medina told OCC, quote, "After multiple contacts with the Department of Revenue explaining the situation and getting no help whatsoever, I contact multiple law enforcement agencies, including the Postmaster General, the Oregon Department of Justice, the Klamath Falls Police, the Oregon State Police, the Marion County Sheriff's Department, and the Salem Police. Each of those agencies claimed it wasn't their jurisdiction. I got the runaround for 2 days straight. I explained that I had copies of all the documents, including the copies of the signer for the certified mail and the copies of the forged and cashed money orders," end quote. Nevertheless, he persisted. Medina finally got Salem Police Department to follow up on all the evidence he had forwarded. From their investigation, police determined that multiple money orders from Medina's business had been stolen, forged, and cashed by the tax man himself. Theodore Raymond Paulson, a 55-year-old employee working in the State Department of Revenue, was arrested by police on June 14th on charges of first-degree theft, mail theft, first-degree official misconduct, and what the hell, let's throw in possession of methamphetamine there as well. So check out the OCC newspaper, occnewspaper.com, if you want to see copies of the evidence and notes that others may be arrested, there might be some other arrests coming, and that more shops may have been victimized as the Salem police widen their investigation. But if Ed Medina had not kept meticulous records of his tax payments and had not used certified mail, I doubt he would have gotten much help from the police in solving this crime. It was only through his dogged determination did the police and state officials budge from their default position that those of us in the cannabis industry are not to be trusted. One can only imagine how many other business owners and how many other marijuana states are getting the shaft from the state when their tax payments turn up missing. Of course, a great deal of the problem would be ameliorated if Congress would pass Colorado Representative Earl Pollmutter's Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, the so-called Safe Banking Act, so marijuana business owners like Medina can pay their taxes electronically like every other legitimate business in America. At least then some tweaker working in the state tax office would have to have at least some hacking skills to steal the marijuana money. This case, if no other case is going to do it, this is the case that should finally convince our Congress that it is time to allow banking for our marijuana industries. We've got this all cash sort of situation here, lack of banking, not only corrupting the people in the industry, but now it's corrupting people in the state regulatory agencies. We have to have safety and security for our financial transactions. This is part and parcel of what we meant by legalizing marijuana and treating it like alcohol. Distributors of alcohol don't have to bring in duffel bags full of cash. Distributors of alcohol don't have to worry about the state tax revenue workers stealing their money orders because they can send their payments in electronically. They can use banking services that every other business gets to use. Contact your congressman today about the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act. It's the Safe Banking Act. My congressman, Earl Blumenauer, I'm sure, is a co-sponsor of that. Try and get your representatives to co-sponsor this as well. And it doesn't matter if they're from a legal state, a medical state, or a prohibition state. Regardless of what your state does with marijuana, I think we can all agree we don't want it to be a cash-only business that leads to thefts and violence and state corruption. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. We're back with Hour 2 in just a second. Stay tuned, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com. You're growing, you're trying, you're rolling.